What I do is I create this list of investors using five simple steps. The first one, right, I get to know the investors and I understand what is their criteria or how they like to make decisions about deals. And based on that, I form my deals on what they're looking for. So I do sometimes what they call a preferred return, Suja, like they get paid first than anything else. And then I do a distribution. Depending on the deal, I can do 70-30, 70-40 investors, but also I have my extended stay hotels when they're 50-50%. And a lot of people get shocked when they're investors and say 50%. And I'm like, whoa, whoa, don't worry. The bottom line is completely different. While the split of 70 and 30% might be sounds very familiar, with the 50 and 50% split, my investors still make much more money than that what they will do with a multifamily.
Welcome to Passive Income Unlocked, where we unlock the doors to intelligent, hands-off real estate investing. We talk to experts in the space about what they do, how they do it, and most importantly, why they do it. My passion is careful, intelligent investing and closing the investing gap one investor at a time. While money doesn't buy happiness, passive income does have the potential to buy back your time. What would you choose to do with your time if you had enough passive income to live your best life? How would you like to spend your days? What kind of impact would you like to make? I'm here to tell you, dream big. There's no ceiling. It's all possible if you take consistent action towards your goals. It's been said that success is 80% mindset and 20% strategy. So we discuss both. Ready to gain knowledge and take action? Let's dive in. Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the show. Today, I'm so excited to introduce our absolutely amazing guest for the day, Jen Maldonado. Jen, thank you so much for being here.
It's my pleasure. I'm really excited to be with you and share some information with your audience. And I'm super, super looking forward to our conversation today.
Thank you, Jen. Me too. I mean, you just have a wonderful background and really excited to dive in. All right. So everyone, Jen has been recognized by Fortune's top 500 companies like J&J and Nestle as a business expert and high performance leader. And I believe she was an engineer in that field. And then in 2012, she decided to take a leap of faith and change her career trajectory to become a real estate investor. Awesome. So excited to hear about that story. I would love to have you dive into some more details about, you know, what you were doing before real estate and then what inspired you to get into real estate and how you made the leap.
Yeah, definitely. It's what people say, from the corporate world to real estate, completely different. And as you mentioned, there's a time in life that we want to find our passion and do what we love. And I did engineering for over a decade for Johnson & Johnson and Nestle. But there was a time in my life that I really wanted to create a different style where I was able to spend time with my family. I was traveling a lot, doing things for other people, building someone else's business. And I wanted my financial freedom. I wanted my time freedom more than anything else. And in the middle of a family emergency, when my mother was diagnosed with cancer, through that process, I also noticed that I was limited, that I could not spend a month with my mom to take care of her, at least that I had to ask permission to someone else. And I guess that triggered me a lot in a way that I wanted to find something different. And I didn't have any experience in real estate. I come from a background where my parents work in my mom was a nurse. My dad was a police officer. And I wasn't raised investing. I wasn't raised in real estate. The only thing I knew about real estate, Suja, it was a monopoly, right? That's the only thing I knew about that. And I just knew that you could buy some real estate, some houses, and at some point maybe turn them into hotels. And that's what happened in 2012. I say no more. I want something different. And I jump into reading this book that most people read, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I think that's been a pretty common book for most real estate investors. And I decided to just get my first deal using my 401k as a down payment. I live in one side. I bought a duplex and rent the other side. I just happened to be at the right time. 2012, I bought a property in Burbank, and that was my first deal. but it gets pretty interesting after that.
Yeah. Oh, awesome. I mean, I love it so far. So when you said you had enough, you kind of alluded to it, but you had enough of not being in control of your own schedule and not having to freedom of time, right?
Yes. It's at some point we stand still for a few years and we figure out what is that we really want. And as you mentioned, like, I didn't control my time. Everybody else was telling me what to do, for how long. I was traveling. I love it because it was a great experience. I'm very grateful for meeting a lot of amazing people, very creative, very smart. And they pushed me to be a better version of myself. But it was that moment when you say, how do I want to spend my time? Do I want to spend my time building someone else's business and, you know, doing the job just because it feels safe? Or do I really want to take a risk, a leap of faith, and get my freedom, get my time, fail if I need to fail, just to make sure that at least I try to do it and be happy with myself and create that financial freedom, that time freedom to do other things with my time, like travel and experience other areas where I love to spend time, like charity and a lot of altruistic work.
For sure. Yeah. There's so much else we could do with our time besides, you know, the majority of our working productive hours to a big, you know, Fortune 500 company or something of that nature. So I went through a similar thing and so can relate a lot. Okay. So yes, I'd love to hear, you know, how you got that first deal done, if you don't mind diving into some of those details.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm going to probably lead you to another challenge I encounter after I quit my job.
Yeah.
So I didn't know anything about real estate. I didn't even know what escrow was. So when I got into real estate, I read that book, Rich Dad Poor Dad. Then I bought another book from Cale McElroy, which is one of the Robert Kiyosaki advisors, the author of this book. And I right away jump into multifamily. I'm like, I gotta do multifamily. So how are we gonna do this? And I do have some money in my 401k that I can use as a down payment. So it accounted against a down payment of a house. I did my research. I studied how other people who was very successful in the multifamily was looking at deals. So I did my little checklist, the engineering and me. Say, okay, I need to do a checklist to at least know that I'm buying right with the information I know.
Yeah.
And that's what it did. So I went and make a couple of offers, like in 3 or 4 properties. And suddenly I was starting in May was my first lesson of real estate. And on September, I was closing on my first deal, but I started making offers around July. So I got the deal. I did it in a traditional way. Right. I got a loan and they approved me. It was my first property. So I took advantage of the first time home buyers loans, FHA, how they call it. And I was lucky enough. But that was the first deal. It went pretty smooth. But what happens when you quit your job and now you don't have a W-2 to show?
Yeah, totally.
And get another deal. Oops. That was pretty interesting. So I guess. Yeah, I guess that's when the real creativity starts, Suja.
Did you purchase that property after you quit your job or before?
Before okay. I quit my job.
So you got one under your belt with the W-2.
Correct. Yes. W-2 got me one and I was super excited. I saw a few, like 2 checks. And after that, I'm like, I'm done. I'm quitting.
That's awesome. Okay. But you didn't think about how you were going to finance the deals going forward.
Nope. I would have, but it was a big lesson. It pushed me to the limits and I will happily share some of those points.
Yeah, let's talk more about that. So, I mean, you know, this business is all about solving problems. It's a team sport. You know, I too went back to work just so that I could have a W-2 and buy another piece of property. And then, you know, after that, I was like, okay, now I'm cutting myself off from getting those types of mortgages. But anyway, so what did you do next?
Yes, I did. I was pretty interested in the different asset types. And when I find myself not having money to buy a property because I used my 401k, I did have some savings, but I needed to figure out how to put this together. Then I learned that there was other kind of assets, the non-performing notes, the paper world, the financing, creative finance portion, which for me was pretty fascinating. And through that process, I met a couple of investors that they were buying packages of notes at a very deep discount. And I'm like, okay, I guess I'm learning now how to do a non-performing note. And I decide to go and study that for like 2 or 3 months. And of course, your checking account starts going down quickly, especially if you live in California. At that time, I was living in Los Angeles, California. So I'm seeing my account freaking out while trying to figure out what to do with real estate. And I found a really good deal that we flip it right away, a non-performing note to a flipper. And I didn't have much money and I didn't want to put the money because I'm like, okay, I really believe in the deal. But if I put all the money in this deal, I don't have any other money. And that was the first time that I shared with some friends and family, hey, there's a project that looks pretty well or pretty good. And I think you guys should look into it. And I partnered with these people and we literally bought a deal. We create the notes, we make it a performing note and we flip it right away. Because it was really, really, really quick. And that was in 2012. So processes were pretty simple to follow. But that was the first one.
Okay, that's awesome. And how did you get the idea to bring your friends and family into that deal? Were you networking and all that stuff?
Yes. Yeah, it was with people who was interested in investing in real estate and learning more about real estate. I just happened to give them a call. Hey, there's this deal and the numbers look good. I guess that one of the things they like about working with me is they knew I was a numbers girl. And that I like a lot to evaluate the deal and do the underwriting criteria, even when I didn't have that much experience. I just knew that I have the tools to evaluate if that was a good deal or not. And I just share with them. And I guess that as you're building relationships in the networking world, and when you focus on bringing value to people, it's pretty simple to bring opportunities and people understand that. You know, that you're there to really help them grow too. No, you're not just there for a sale or for a quick hit and run. Let's do a deal. Let's go away. They know that and understand that you're there to make them money and help them grow their wealth.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think it's definitely, we're helping each other grow and become better together. It's not transactional or, you know, ideally it shouldn't be. It's like we're teaming up really to make something happen and, you know, we're both bringing something to the table and taking something away as well. So yeah, and then that's the beauty of partnerships, right? Like we all come into a partnership in order to benefit and we're all bringing something different to the table. So love that. Yeah. So you first started, I know you've done just a number of different things since you started in that. Was it your first property that you bought when you had the W-2? Was that a multi-unit or?
Yes, that was a duplex. So I always was very inclined to duplex, triplex, and fourplex. And the non-performing notes that we bought were single family homes, but I was learning and understanding how they work. But I have done duplexes. I have done development projects of 3 and 4 units specifically. I did a few commercials recently that we finished just right on before the pandemic and we sold them.
What was that commercial? What?
Commercial multifamily was only okay. six units, but okay. That was like the step up for me on how do we do this commercial thing.
No, that's amazing. So you're buying like raw land and putting 3, 4, 5, 6 units on it?
No, we are actually buying single family homes. And what we're doing in the specific area where I'm buying in Koreatown, Los Angeles, is we're taking a single family home that no one's know what to do with them. They're asking too much. We're taking them down and we're building 3 and 4 units in a 3-floor design. So it's our main expertise. We design in three floors for those specific projects. And depending what it is, we might sell it or we might just keep it and shift it and do we have one that we're renting. One of the units is a long-term rental, but the other 2 units, we're making an Airbnb just to ensure we're taking the most out of that project. We're getting the most out of that project.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that makes sense. So yeah, well, that's really cool. So you did a couple of 3 and 4, and then you also did a 6-plex, you said, right? Was it a plex?
Yes. Yes, that was a 6-plex. I did a 6-plex.
Okay. Yes. So was that taking one single family house and turning taking it down and putting up 6 units?
This was a 2 units. This was a 2 unit. So we took 2 units down and we put 6.
Okay. Awesome. So. That's very exciting. Yeah. I mean, I love just the variety of stuff that you've done. I mean, it sounds like, you know, rehabs, multifamily units, hotels, and you're doing extended stays right now and just a lot of different things. I'd love to hear, you know, or how did you get your development deals financed?
Yeah, definitely. I did one of the things that I did very well when I was starting, it was to find really good operators in the area. And how I did it, people like to make things sometimes too complex. For me, it was pretty simple. I took my car, I drove to the different areas, and whenever I saw a development project or a rehab project, I stopped and I asked, who is the owner of this project? Who is developing? And I will get a business card that will lead me to that operator. And through that process, I start figuring out the different systems they had in place to really get the deals. And sometimes when I saw that there were really good operators, I will come, jump, and partner up with them, either by bringing capital, my personal one, my investor's one, and the one that I developed wholesaling in the past, right? So I create a bunch of cash. But that's how I was finding the deals. People who already had the deals, I'm like, I'm going to plug in their business and in the system. I'm going to bring something of value to them, something that they're being challenged with. I'm going to be a problem solver, not just a real estate investor, but a problem solver. And one of the things that I noticed, Asuja, is that most of these developers were struggling finding capital because they are managing their operations and they're getting some deals, but they're not raising the capital, bringing the partnership to allow an acceleration in their business or more acquisitions. So they are limited to 1 or 2 projects because they don't have access to that capital. And that part, I learned it by not having my W-2, how to talk to investors or be very creative on how to finance a deal specifically. So, but I found the deals in the MLS, I found the deals off market, and I found deals also with operators. And the off markets were a lot of referrals. I will put out there in my social media, hey, I'm looking for this specific deal. Like, I want these many units. I want a lot of this size in this specific zip code. I was so specific that people were, it was pretty effective for them just to refer a deal to me because they knew exactly what I was looking for and what I was willing to pay and what I wasn't willing to pay. So that helps a lot. I use social media. I use existing relationship with other investors, networking to find those development deals.
Awesome. Yeah. Very interesting. So just curious, what did you, you know, if you say you did this driving for, you drove around and you go to a site and say, who's building this, get a business card. And then what did you say to those people when you called them?
This show is sponsored by Lux Capital Investment Group. Lux Capital provides pre-vetted, highly favorable investment opportunities on a risk-adjusted basis. Our opportunities are diversified across asset classes, geographies, and operators. We are nothing short of rigorous in our approach to evaluating investments. We focus on downside protection, conservative underwriting, recession-resistant asset classes, and forging strong relationships with operating partners and investors. If you want to be an intelligent, hands-off investor and gain access to the types of deals that I like to invest in personally, make sure to go to lux-cap.com, L-U-X-E-CAP.com, and sign up for our newsletter.
Yeah, I just took the phone and say, listen, I am a real estate investor in the area. I noticed that you are rehabbing this property. I'm looking for opportunities to invest or partner. Would you be willing to make money with me? And some of them will say, no, I do my own deals. Great. And what is that you're looking for? Then are you looking for deals? Are you looking for money? And of course, everyone is always looking for money. So they could not say no to me in that perspective. But if they were looking for deals only, I will ask them a lot of questions specifically. And if I could bring a deal to them, at least I will understand how they were making numbers. I wasn't very good at doing rehabs, but I use that opportunity of research as a way to understand people's numbers and how they were doing their numbers. How were they, how much they were putting in a property and why, what kind of design, how they were coming with these ideas. So either I was getting out of those conversations a deal, an opportunity to wholesale, because at that time I needed to replace my income, or also I was having the opportunity to bring capital to the project through me or through my network of investors. So yeah, that I went with that intention specifically.
For sure. Love it. And so then did you find someone that you wanted to work with like over and over again for these development deals? Okay.
Yes. This is the person that I keep developing 3 and 4 units in Koreatown. We have done over 10 projects now together in the past 5 years. And yeah, we just keep looking for more projects. We are looking at how to accelerate the business now and expand from Los Angeles, California to Austin, Texas.
Oh, nice. Okay, cool. Very cool. And then like, what can you share about how you're structuring those deals? Like if you're bringing the capital and what other roles and responsibilities you divide with like the builder?
Yes, that's amazing. Yes, definitely. So I'm going to share with you 2 perspectives of this. I'm going to give you the more advanced, which is through syndications, right? And then I'm going to give you one of the most simple deals I have a structure that was highly profitable, very creative when I started. Let's start with the complex one. And I'm going to call it complex, but it's not. I do a lot of syndications. I work with different syndicator lawyers that they prepare documents, they draft the documents. And what I have been doing is I built my relationship with multiple investors. I have a list of investors that I know personally, or I don't even market because everyone refers me people. So that's how I raise capital. I'm planning to develop a marketing strategy, but what I do is I create this list of investors using 5 simple steps. The first one, right, I get to know the investors and I understand what is their criteria or how they like to make decisions about deals. And based on that, I form my deals on what they're looking for. So I do sometimes what they call a preferred return, Suja, like they get paid first than anything else. And then I do a distribution. Depending on the deal, I can do 70-30, 70 for the investors, but also I have my extended stay hotels when they're 50-50%. And a lot of people get shocked when they're investors and say 50%. And I'm like, whoa, whoa, don't worry. The bottom line is completely different. While the split of 70 and 30% might be sounds very familiar, with the 50 and 50% split, my investors still make much more money than that what they will do with a multifamily. So with that being said, I do syndications, a lawyer draft the paperwork. I do it with accredited investors or with family and friends, depending what kind of projects. I offer them a preferred return. Sometimes it's 6% to 8%. Sometimes I do debt on the fund, right? Or a syndication in debt. We just lend and they just get a monthly payment. But the most profitable deals is the combination of the preferred return with a profit at the back end or distributions between the distributions. So that's how I normally do the $1 million projects.
Okay. That's awesome. Just to add on to that, this is a show that's focused on syndication. So thank you so much for just breaking all of that down. And would love to just, what about on the GP side, you know, between you and the builder, are you guys splitting, you know, that 30% or 50%, 50-50, or how do you decide how to do that?
Yes, depending what kind of projects we have, depending how long we're going to stay in the project, is that we make that decision and the roles of each other. For the operators, depending what they're doing, let's suppose we're going to keep a project for a long term, we will split distributions. The difference on how I love to structure this is me, I will be managing. This is where I'm a little bit different than most indicators. I tend to have these specific rules. I manage all the financing and all the books. If you're going to get any kind of loan, I don't allow you to get a loan without my approval. That's the only deal I bring to the table. I can bring all the money. I don't have a problem. But I always have the lead on the financing. It doesn't matter how much ownership you have. There's a clause there, pretty well established. Jennifer is the decision maker for financing. And I manage the books because I want to see that there being smart decisions made by this operator. So Now, for the operator, they get this distribution, but also they get a salary. We make sure that they get paid. The better they do, the better they will get paid. But in the meantime, they're capped to a salary. A lot of people get surprised because I don't charge at the back end, right? Which 1 or 3% every year of the performance of the property. No, I just charge a flat fee and we're going to make money together. We will make sure that we're doing so well, because if not, we're going to be working for free. And a lot of people think that that's pretty bold. Some people think that that's not the smart way to do so because I don't make that much money. But honestly, for me, it's pretty fair because I will do my best to make the most money. And that's what has been working for me. Now, is that the best option for a lot of people? I don't know, right? You have to find your sweet spot. But that's how I structured a deal with the operator. It can be 50-50 and a salary. It can be a third, depending on the kind of roles that we're doing, right? I have a couple of two operators, the developers that I work with. I do have different developers. So normally we divide it because they are managing all the operations in regards to construction, permits, inspection, development, architectures, and everything in regards to doing that construction project. They also get paid because they have other areas where they have these relationships with the contractors, or they're the contractors, right? So that's how I divide them. So it's per project, I will say.
For sure. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Thank you for kind of going through some of those different scenarios that you might encounter when working with different operators. And so are you working on multiple different business lines right now? Like I know you're working on extended stay hotels. Are you also developing and doing other things right now, or are you focused on one at a time?
I am very seasoned investor. I do look at my target market and what is changing in the market to make those decisions. And at this point, I have three major assets I'm focusing on. One of them being 3 and 4 units. I still think it's strong, only residentials at this moment. The multifamily development for commercial properties is great, but there's a lot of competition that has dropped a lot of the cap rate. And I'm focusing high performance deals. So things that don't give me a lot of money to my investors, then I'm hesitant. So 3 and 4 units. I do have 2 custom homes that we're still working on. It's been a long project. I don't think I will ever do a custom home again, to be open. But that was one that it was a pretty interesting project, very different market. And then I have extended stay hotels, specifically economic tier limited service. And it's just what I saw, what was coming in the market 4 years ago is exactly what we were expecting. So I didn't have a crystal ball. I have probabilities of what could it work. And that's the one that I'm focusing right now based on what's happening with the pandemic, based on what's happening with the multifamily market, based on what's happening with different situations and the politics that lead me to see this is going to be the next best asset type in the upcoming 5 to 10 years.
Okay, awesome. Would you please break down for us what it is about extended stay hotels that you like and what you're doing, like what you're buying and what you're doing to them and why it works so well for you?
Yeah, definitely. It's pretty interesting. A lot of people know hotels, right? If you're playing Monopoly, this is where everything makes sense, right? In my trajectory, you will only think about the traditional hotel, the one that you stay 1 day, 1 week, but there's limitations of how long people can stay there. For those limitations or for you to have guests that will stay longer than a month, you need a special permit, and that's the extended stay hotel. Right. So in the extended stay hotels, there are different tiers. There's the luxury tier and there's the mid tier and economic tier. Mostly, if you look at extended stay America brand or franchise, Starwood Capital, Blackstone Properties that recently bought extended stay America for $2 billion, you will look at the model of the more corporate world / people who live in the hotels that they don't want to live in an apartment, right? Because maybe they don't want to clean. but also there's multiple services in these hotels. And then you have the economic tier, more budget conscious, blue collar, essential workers that they live paycheck to paycheck, but they need a place to stay. And these people might not be able to afford a deposit for an apartment. They might not be able to afford a monthly rent, but they can do a weekly rent because they live that way. So with that being said, our avatar is these economic tier hotels. And what we do is we will take a traditional hotel and we will convert these specific hotels. Sometimes they have kitchens, sometimes they don't. If they don't have kitchens itself, we will adjust the amenities so the hotel can serve somehow the economic tier level in order to address the kitchenist challenge. Now, if we have kitchens, we just charge more. But it's a pretty simple, we keep it very simple. I like simplicity and effectiveness. So what we do is we just improve these hotels, we paint them, we do a very minimum rehabs to it, what is necessary for the target market that we are working on. The reason why we like this is not only because through the history since 1977, if you take a look of the Highland Group that they study hotels, they have shown how extended hotels have been performing really well, right? And that's why the big boys, Blackstone and all of these companies went and bought Extended Stay America, because during the pandemic, it served another purpose too. It served also counties and corporate contracts and also served the city contracts to manage some of the challenges that they were having with people impacted by COVID, with families impacted by COVID. In the politics world, if you look at the new administration, they have released some of the immigration barriers or different rules that they have, requirements that they have in the past, which now it opens another opportunity for extended stay hotels to get some of those contracts to support the initiatives to manage these situations with the immigrants, because they need to stay somewhere. And we have been getting those corporate contracts and those government contracts because of the relationship we have established in the past years, especially in the area of Phoenix, Arizona.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So you have contracts to host immigrants in these. Okay. Interesting. And are those immigrants that came over or like how did that they're just lacking housing or how does that work?
Yes, they're lacking housing or they're being placed temporarily until they can resolve the situation with their permits, with their visas, with whatever situation they're dealing with the government. So the government placed them and they just send the immigrants to us and we just provide a safe environment for them where they can have their families. Of course, there are certain requirements and rules that they need to follow according to what the government will establish. But that's how it works. So we don't get a lot into the needy details or every detail.
No, that's fine.
Yeah.
Then as far as like a returns perspective, why do you prefer extended stay to multifamily? I mean, is it that people are paying more per night for the same product type? Is it that, because it sounds like they are weekly stays, so you can definitely, you know, it's easier to remove someone if they're not paying rent. But what about just the actual returns? Like, are you getting like a premium for offering these?
Yes. It's completely different. The returns are magnificent. And I mean, just to give an idea, some of these projects, we are making easily from 27% a year to 43% a year on these hotels.
Cash on cash.
So, cash on cash per year.
Oh, wow.
Yes. So, and the reason for that is I will say that we combine the best of two worlds. We combine the steady income of a multifamily with extended stay. And when you find an optimum balance between extended stay and the daily / weekly, now you can bring the seasonal upsides from a regular hotel or even the Airbnb kind of concept, right? So having those two not only give you more profitability, but also flexibility to adjust what happens in the market. Just to give an example, when the pandemic happened, what we did is most of our extended stay, we changed it. We increased the number of extended stay rooms because that gave us the opportunity to not have to be limited by the government with having only 25% occupancy like the traditional hotels. And the other advantage we have, as you mentioned, if someone doesn't pay, we can just call the police and you're out of the hotel, right? It allows us also to rent those properties at a higher price than a regular multifamily because people can afford certain things, but they are willing to pay for other things, premiums, because they adjust more to their schedule. And that's the part that I love about the extended stay, that flexibility and still that steady income from like simulates the multifamily.
Yeah, for sure. So would you say that the tenants who are, or the guests who are staying at the extended stay, are they kind of like working to save up so that they can move into a regular apartment? Or, I mean, does it vary? How long, what would you say some of the ranges of people who are looking to stay there?
Yes, that's a great question. Some people, they just want to live in the extended stay hotels. They have been living there for 3, 4, 5 years. We buy hotels that sometimes they have been there for over 10 years living there. But what you will see is a diverse group of people. I will say 50% of them are transitioning between careers, between cities, between homes. And as you mentioned, either they are saving up to get to their house, to get the down payment or for the house, get the deposit for an apartment. And they can stay there 1 month, 3 months, 5 months until they do that. So 50% of them are in that transitional process. And I will say that the other, another 10%, it's for the tourism. But the other 40% is a lot of people coming and going that needs to stay in a place for a certain amount of time, like construction workers, that they need to go and do a job for 2 or 3 months, but then they have to leave, right? Because it's the job, it's in, right, it's there. So I will say that that's mainly the avatar, people transitioning to a new home, to a new place, or people deciding that they just want to live in a hotel.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, very interesting stuff. Thank you so much for the deep dive into that model. Would you please, Jen, share with the listeners how they can learn more about you and anything else you want to share?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I do have a website, which is Jen Maldonado. Let me spell Maldonado, MALDONADO.com. So JenMaldonado.com. I also love to post in social media and Facebook Invest with Jen, where people can see what we're working on. We share openly the different projects with the investors that join the group. And I like to be connected with people because I also love to see what other people are doing. So they can find me also in Instagram and Invest with Jen Maldonado. Now, in regards to what to share, Suja, I think that a lot of people are out there limiting themselves on progressing in the world of investing in real estate because they haven't learned the art of raising capital and also how to put a syndication together. So for those people out there who are considering to escalate or grow their business, I will recommend for them to explore the opportunity to do syndications because that could be the accelerator to go from one to many investments.
Awesome. Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you so much, Jen. What a wonderful conversation and really great to get to know you and hear everything that you're working on. Have a wonderful day and we'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to Passive Income Unlocked. Before you go on to continue with your amazing day, please take a moment to reflect on what you truly desire in life. Then think about one thing you can do to push the ball forward in that direction. Also, please head over to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave an honest rating and review of this show. It really would mean so much to me. Passive Income Unlocked is brought to you by Lux Capital. Lux works with investors nationwide to invest in real estate. We are closing the investing gap one investor at a time. Connect online at www.lux-cap.com, LUXE-CAP.com. For tons of free educational content to further your success.